So today we're back and we're joined by a very good friend of mine and a very good man in Laurie Walker. Welcome, Loza.
Welcome. Thanks for having me. I'm excited, really excited, especially when it's anything to do with you as well.
Okay, good. So how we like to start this is a little bit of a history about you, not just as a player, because you aren't just a football player, but a kind of a little bit of background on yourself for those that don't know you. Of course, talk about your career, kind of what other avenues you're looking at now and where you're at this point, but kind of what got you here. Mm-hmm. And then we'll go from there. But what's going to be what I'm particularly excited about today is two things. Is we've had some conversations in the past year that have been so profound and helpful to both of us that have been really, really great. And what we found in each other, the solace we found in each other and the help we gave each other through difficult times, it was really, really important. So I know there's so much gold to come out of you that will help so many other people. But also for the kind of the football listener, of which we have plenty, is the element of being a goalkeeper. Being the only kind of individual.
I'm excited about that. Because obviously I was the other side, wasn't I? I was trying to put him past the goalie, so.
And we always get called crazy as well. So.
Yeah.
There we go.
So
going on that one,
I don't think we're going to debunk any myths. But floor's yours. Let's go from the start, bro. Let's talk about you.
Where to start? So, you know, you say obviously my life hasn't revolved around football. There is more to me. Yes, I know that now as well. But obviously since a very young age, the age of 9 years old, I was obviously like at school, like your regular kid wanting to be a footballer. Then got picked up by Luton Town at 9. And from that point there, I spent my whole life in the footballing world, I guess you could say, you know, traveling down to academies from school, literally directly from school, having not your average life that a young sort of person would have, you know, not being able to leave school, go out with your mates and sort of go down the park and have a kick around. You know, how many times, countless times, obviously left school and my mates are like, oh, are you coming to do this? Are you coming to do that? Not your usual stuff of getting up to mischief that you like to as a child, you know what I mean? But, you know, obviously revolved a lot around that. Traveling down to Watford 2-3 times a week as a young lad, you know, and that had its difficulties as a youngster as well. You know, and I felt for a lot of my life, I've been just known as that lad who plays football, you know, even by some of my friends, I was always that, oh, he plays football. That's all he does. Da, 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 da. And you do sort of end up unintentionally picking up that tag, I guess. Mm. And that sort of rolls with it by a lot of people, you know, and from there I developed on, left school. As a conversation we've just had before we started this with no qualifications whatsoever. Getting told by countless teachers, you're going to amount to nothing and you'll always be this problem child, da, 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 da. Had my parents told that I was never going to amount to anything. I'd always be a problem child in school, out of school, sorry. You know, I left school to do an apprenticeship at MK Dons, which I felt was my savior at the time because I had no clue what I would have done if that wouldn't have paid off. So left school to go and play football. Obviously took my foot off the gas with all my lessons at school because I knew that was coming and probably wasn't the right thing to do, but I did and knew that from that point there I had to make it work somehow, by hook or by crook. I was going to get there, you know. And moving forward from that, got released by Dons at 18 at the end of my apprenticeship. And that was when it first really hit me, because I was like, right, now what? Where do I go? Like, I'm in this world of, I've done this for 2 years and it really is a bubble. You know, you don't have any kind of life skills, do we call it? And I was just like, right, what do I do? Got not lucky, but my agent found me a club. I went down to Millwall and signed my first pro contract down there. Moved off down to London to live with a family. And then that was another lesson, obviously having to get myself back and forth from London, living with this family, obviously to a certain extent, they take care of you. You know, they sort of, they make you meals and everything else. But other than that, you've got to be self-sufficient. Mm. So that was the first life lesson of, right, manage your money. If you want to go home every weekend and go out partying like I did, you know, you've got to manage everything. Yeah. And that was a real quick wake up call. had a great time in London, loved Millwall, loved working with Tony Burns, my goalkeeper coach. And he was probably one of the coaches who developed me the most from this, I call it from little boy to a man of a goalkeeper, because he had so many ways. I remember literally my first day in training and literally just mulling around, served all the first team lads, you know, sort of as it goes in order. Yeah. By you got your first team goalie goes in, then the number two, then if there's another one, they go in, then the apprentices or the young pros go in. And I remember walking towards the goal and I've just seen this ball whiz past my head, literally probably inches away, and I've heard it. And I've turned around and I've looked, and my goalkeeper coach has just gone, "If you ever fucking do that again," he goes, "I'll kill you." I went, "What?" And he's half volleyed a ball at me because I turned my back on him to walk into the goal. He's like, "You never turn away from the play." And since this day, I've never walked back to the goal facing the goal. I've always been looking up the pitch, even to this day. And I remember it like it was yesterday because I couldn't believe it. I was literally 18 turning 19. And I've got this guy who's played for Arsenal and everything else. And he's just hit, and he could half volley a ball as well.
It sounds like if we can get it to whiz past your head.
Honestly, when I tell you, he was, I can't remember how old he was. He must've been 60 plus, but he struck the ball like a 20 year old. Like, he was just renowned for this half volley. So that was my first lesson, never to do it. And obviously being at Millwall, you know what it's like. I'm sure you've come up against him a few times yourself. Yeah. Like, it's a very hostile place for a young lad.
Yeah.
And I was out every Saturday on the pitch with him doing the warm-ups, and it was just that you could just feel a real sort of environment there. But then, moving from there again, you know, that was my first sort of real heartbreak, because I had such a good season. I went out on loan, made an impression on loan. And I remember I come back off my second loan because I'd done my ankle ligaments, and I was in the physio room, and Richard Shaw and Burnsy both come up to me in the physio room at the time and went, "Oh, the gaffer," who was Kenny Jackett at the time, "wants to see you tomorrow." And I was like, "Oh, right, okay, fair enough." And bearing in mind all the other first year pros 2 months before I got their decisions and all been released. And his words to me were, "You know, I'm unsure on you at the moment. Like, you've done really, really well. Just keep doing what you're doing." And I was thinking, cool, head down, keep working hard. Anyway, I remember Rich Shaw and Tony Burns coming, and they were both like, "We're really pleased with how you've done this year. Like, we're pretty adamant you're going to get yourself a new contract." And I was like, excellent. So I'm now buzzing, told my dad everything. And through this injury, it really picked me up again, because I got injured right at the wrong point, as you want to call it. And I was just thinking, I don't know where I'm going to go with this. Anyway, next day I go in all giddy, excited, walk up to manager's office, knock the door, walk up the stairs, there's Kenny Jackett stood in his pants. And I was like, oh Christ, like, what am I doing here? Like, and he was like, "Oh, give me a minute." Off, waited outside, and he's like, "Yeah, come in." Anyway, sat down. He's like, "How are you?" He's like, "How do you think the season's been?" The usual chat that these managers give you. And I was like, yeah. I was like, "I felt I've developed really well." And he's like, "You've been brilliant." He's like, "You know, we've had glowing feedback from your loan spells." He's like, "Burnsy and Rich both talk very highly of you." And he went, "But I'm going to let you go." And I literally went from up here to just a mess.
Yeah.
And I was like, what has just happened? I walked back downstairs and I remember the goalkeeper coach come up to me, shook my hand and went, "Congratulations." I went, "On what?" He's like, "Your new deal." I went, no. I said, "He's just released me." And they were of the understanding he was going to keep me. And he just, I don't know where the communication lines went wrong, but he just canned me off. And just like that, I was back in this situation again of, now what? Now where do I go? Who? And like we've just discussed, who am I? And this is where I really started to struggle of this is all I've done. Yeah. This is who I am. Like, I have to be this footballer because I've got to impress my friends, and they know me as this footballer, and I have to do it. And again, the same turnstile happens, obviously speaking to my agent, and then I end up going on trial at various places, ended up at Cambridge United, I believe. And then from there, I just kind of bounced a little bit. So nothing really major at Cambridge happened, sort of just sat on the bench, got released at the end of the year, like most number twos do. You just kind of go on this journey of just sitting on a bench. Mm. And as a young goalie as well, it's very, very different because they do develop a lot later.
Okay.
Mm. Or back then it was deemed as young goalies were a liability.
Yeah.
Whereas now it's done a full 180 and you've got clubs taking 19, 20 year olds. Okay. And it's just done a full flip turn of like, everyone wants young and fresh now and this next saleable item basically. Mm. But yeah, so bounced around, went from there at Cambridge up to Morecambe. Again, living on my own, having to rent my own place. So much to the point where I had no idea of what I was doing. I rented a place with a guy called Adam Rundle, who I was living with. And come the end of that tenancy, I literally, the end of my contract, last day of the season come, I turned up to this estate agency and dropped the keys off and went, oh, I've moved out the flat. And they went, you meant to give us a month's notice? And I was like, oh, well, I'm going anyway. Yeah. I was like, I don't really know how this works. Yeah. And I was just, that's what I mean. I was just totally clueless to how it worked. I didn't realize you were supposed to give a month's notice before you moved out. Yeah. So I literally turned up and they were like, what are you doing? And I was like, these are the keys to your flat. And they were like, yeah, but, and I was like, well, it's not my problem. I'm not here anymore. So do what you need to, basically. And that was another lesson.
How old are you at this point?
21 maybe, I think I was.
So quite a lot's already happened by the age of 21, really.
Yeah. Gets better.
Yeah.
So much better.
I'm sorry to just to pause you in there for a second, but by the age of 21, you've already experienced what you call your first heartbreak.
Mm.
And what I was listening to there is how vividly you remember it.
Oh yeah, I think, obviously you can back this up. I think these things happen and you're so trained to put them to the back of your mind. Mm. Obviously, I've had this conversation with you on the phone very much about how it's right, get up and get on with it. You have to be this strong-minded person of, yeah, that's happened, but you've now got to get on with it.
Mm.
And you have this such a small window of...
You've got to seize that moment, haven't you?
100%.
As soon as that moment's hit you, it is, it's back in the head. Got to seize the next moment. And eventually you don't realise how many of them you collect because you're always trying to get to the next one.
And I think it all then creates that big kind of blow up eventually because as we've spoken at again, all these things subconsciously sit and I'm probably, obviously after speaking to you and obviously various other professionals, they make you react in a certain way and you don't even realise. You don't even realise, you think that's normal behaviour, but you are so driven into this hardened shell, especially early days in my football career. I've gone through this, I feel like I've gone through the transition because it's changed so much. I was under the likes of Martin Allen and he was absolutely off his head.
Yeah.
You know, Kenny Jackett, old school, Tony Burns, half volleying a ball at the back of my head to try and get me to switch on, and you wouldn't be able to get away with that nowadays. Mm. And it just, you know, I don't think you ever forget it.
No.
And I don't think you ever will forget it. And it just, some you can laugh at them now because they're all great learning curves. Mm. You know what I mean? But they're just sort of, they really do stick.
Yeah, you can.
So you're saying at the beginning there, you're saying the teachers said you're going to amount to nothing. Do you think as your career goes on, do you think that plays a part? Do you think that's like is that a driver for you? Or is that something like every time something kind of goes, it's like, does that?
No, I believed it.
Yeah.
I believed it in a sense that, and it's only since I've met my partner now that she's made me believe and see so much that I have so much more potential to give.
Mm.
And talking to my partner and you, Jim, you're both very similar people.
Mm.
And the words that have come out of their mouth is you are going to thrive so much more after your career and you're going to have so much more to give. And you both echoed that because you said it to me on the phone as well. And I went, it's like listening to my missus talk because you said exactly the same thing. And that's one thing that sticks with me because I never believed it. I left school and I was like, I'm the problem.
Yeah.
Obviously, my parents split up when I was young. I was 9. It wasn't an easy time to be in.
Mm.
You know, there was a lot of things that went on between them, you know, their issues separate to everything else. And I think I was always like, I'm the problem.
I think it's such a hard thing to say to a 9-year-old or her, like, to say you're never going to amount to nothing. Like, it's those words stick, and you say sometimes it's it can be a driver, and sometimes it can be a hindrance. And I think say it's such a, I think we don't realize how much impact our words actually have, no matter what age, especially at a young age, that you can carry that for the rest of your career. And you are so much more than that. Like, but for someone to say that at that age
I think it's criminal. I think, you know, it's one thing that you'd never expect from someone in a professional environment like that to say about a child.
Mm-hmm.
And having worked in schools in sort of that industry when I went part-time, it is horrendous.
Mm.
And people just go, oh, he's a problem child.
Mm.
Well, no, no, he's not. Why?
Yeah.
What's going on behind the scenes to make him like that? Because you don't just give birth to somebody and go, oh, it's a problem.
Yeah, that's a good point.
It doesn't happen. There's something beyond it that, you know,
mm. yeah.
that 100%. Creates that.
Mm.
And people don't take the time to understand it
mm.
and see what's mm. deeper rooted in that situation, if that mm. makes sense.
Yeah, yeah.
But no, I think from the driving side of it, for sure, I think there was always a mentality in me, and I've never seemed to lose it,
mm.
of that you can knock me down in the football world, but I won't stop.
Mm.
I will get what I want.
Yeah.
I don't know how I'm going to do it, but I will do it somehow.
Mm.
And that's been sort of the running theme in my career, really, by really making sure I won't stop.
Mm.
I think on the contrary to that, on the complete flip side, you reiterating something I said to you, I didn't overthink when I said that to you. I've spent time with you and had conversations with you, and it became very apparent to me that you are going to thrive after football. Like, there was mm. many reasons. I'm sure we'll look into it later as we talk, but there's many reasons why you're going to do that in from both a coaching role and a business role and as a human. And on the flip side of that, how much you've cherished that mm. and how you're now bringing that back up to me, because that's clearly sat in the opposite way. So in the same sense that now at 35 years old, you can hear that information and that can make you feel, give you comfort about what's coming next for you, because someone you respect as a friend and your partner have said you're going to thrive afterwards. So as an adult, you're still, the opposite side of that is giving you power, is giving you confidence, sure. is giving you like contentment. So the impact of your words is so, just now is so, yeah. so huge. Like,
I think coming from yourself, obviously, how I reached out to you and in the manner of what it was, the reason why.
Yeah.
We'd known of each other before that.
Yeah.
We'd never had that real close conversation, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
We'd always have a conversation in passing.
Yeah.
Or I'm still on the side of a pitch abusing you just for a bit of banter.
Yeah.
And, but no, on a serious level, because our relationship just flourished.
Mm.
And for someone so early to say that to me meant so much, because really it come from somebody who I just sort of dumped on very quickly. And I've gone, this is my life. Mm. And you went, no problem. And whereas a lot of people would go, oh, geez, what's this all about? This geezer needs help. Whereas mm. every day you were then ringing me and it mm. just, you hold on to people you value so, mm. so much and what they say. And I think that's why it sticks.
Did it give you a bit of peace?
For sure. Because like we just discussed just before we would come on here, it's, there's always that element of when you're in the middle of your career, you think, oh, I've got loads of time mm. left. I've done that and I'm now sat at 35
mm.
and I'm thinking, wow, like I've had so many times where I've gone, I don't know what I'm going to do after football. I don't know where my life's going to take me.
Mm.
I've looked at all sorts. I was looking at yeah. plumbing degrees. I was looking at becoming an electrician. I was like, what do I do? I have my coaching business. It does really well.
Yeah.
But I was just on that stage where I was like, what do I do?
Mm.
But then to hear that, from an outsider, let's just, you're not an outsider at all.
But I understand what you're
saying. From like yeah. someone outside of your direct family, yeah. like your partner, mm. to hear that, you're like, yeah, it they might obviously be true. See something.
It might be
yeah,
true.
They
it
see something that I can't yeah, quite yeah, see. Yeah, yeah.
It might be
yeah.
true. And that's yeah. a lovely thing for you to feel. It might be true.
For sure.
I feel that person may have seen me. I feel seen. And what they're saying might be true. And in that moment, you felt seen and validated.
Absolutely.
And confident, which is beautiful. But going back now to that comment as a youngster with the person in the hierarchy of your world, you have your parents and then you have the teachers. They are your bosses. So to hear that from someone that you would have had some level of respect for must have been incredibly damaging.
It's a weird one. I didn't think it did
mm.
because at the time I hated teachers. And I was like, I'm just going to make your life as much hell as possible.
Yeah.
Because I was like, even at that age, I was like, I'm going to be a footballer. So I don't really care what you
yeah.
say,
yeah.
as every young lad mm. is. Very few it happens to.
Mm.
You've got to be in that small 1%, I believe it is. I think, I can't remember what the stats yeah. are now. I might have got even smaller, but that small 1% that make it through,
mm.
That's where I was at. But yeah. then when you see that longer down the line and meeting obviously my partner Jade, and I was like, I'm thick, I'm stupid, I don't know what to do with this, I can't do that, I can't do this. And that's where it has lied, because you straight away go into that, I am that, I'm not going to amount to anything. And that's where the I'm thick, I'm stupid comes out, because of what got said back then. Directly that point, it didn't really hit, but then it lands further down the line.
Did you ever feel, and I'm hearing my own childhood back now as you talk, and we'll get back on track with the history of your career as well. This is what happens. We naturally kind of navigate and meander away from
I don't think we have long enough, to be honest.
Yeah. But I was a problematic child in the sense of I had ADHD. Like I was, and my mum's always said, and this is not a criticism of my mum because she'd done her best, but like she said to me, like, ADHD 25, 30 years ago was not seen how it's seen now. You were just a problem. Yeah. You were just like hyperactive. You were making everyone else's life much, much harder. Therefore, you are the problem child. So my mum would do lots of things with me. She worked tirelessly to keep me entertained and to keep me busy and to tire me out, essentially. But would also, I remember her apologizing about me quite often before I went into the rooms and like, oh, this is Jim. Like he is a bit intense, and he is going to be a bit crazy, or he is going to be a little bit full on, or he might be. So in my adulthood, I ended up apologizing. I'm hearing you say it now. I would get in before you.
Yeah.
So I was like, I'm not going to give you the time to tell me I'm stupid, or tell me I'm a bit problematic, or I'm a bit hyperactive, or I'm a bit too loud, or I'm a bit too intense. I'm just going to tell you all those things now, so you don't get to throw it at me.
Yeah. 100%.
And I'm hearing you say that now. Yeah. It's a protection mechanism. So I'd almost announce that when I walked into rooms with new people, so they didn't get to then hurt me with it when they realized it themselves.
So I would either go, can you do this? Because then it'd stop that embarrassment of, you know, I'm not great. Mm. I've got very mild dyslexia, and writing emails and stuff like that were not comfortable with me.
Yeah.
So I'd always go, oh, can you just do this for me? Like, I'm a little bit busy. I'd make an excuse of like not having to put myself in that embarrassing situation of going, oh, how do I spell this, or how do I do that? And I would actually, for example, sending text messages or something, if I didn't know how to spell a word, I'd rewrite the whole message with words I knew what I was capable.
Yeah.
You know, and that's the kind of things similar to you, where you've apologized to yourself before anyone else can do it. I wouldn't put myself in that situation, not thinking I can't do it, but didn't want that embarrassment of getting mocked if they're going, oh, you're X age and you can't even do that.
Yeah.
So it was that similar situation to you. Yeah. I think that's where I say where what teachers said to you at school, I think that's where it lands, and further down the line before you even realize it, you know?
That's the beauty of this podcast is that we learn about each other and by myself, even as we go. It's not something I'd thought about for a long time, but I know I do it.
It's crazy.
Okay, so we're going to go back to you being 21 and you're bouncing around and you're a number two here, you're a number two there. And even as I heard Laurie say that, I was thinking of my own experience of football, and I know yours would be the same. Like, so even now, like him just being, he's clearly a very talented young man, but he's not actually even playing. He's just sitting on the bench because he's a young goalkeeper. Yeah. Like,
as a forward,
we would play.
Yeah.
No matter what had happened, like we'd get 10 minutes, we'd get 50 minutes, we'd get 20 minutes, we'd get a taste.
Yeah.
So I'm already thinking like...
I think you have to have a good mentality. Because the goalkeeper. Like, for us to say, we play, we're in, realistically, we can utilise you out on the right wing, you might be out on the left wing, but there's positions for you. See, as a goalie, there's one position and there might be three of you contending for it. And I was always thinking, like, as a goalie and you're a number two or number three, how do you keep your mind like going and being on point and ready? Because obviously at some stage you may be needed. Sure. So how are you kind of ready to just like jump in? How do you keep your mind focused on that?
And I think I'm just going to add to that. Can you tell me how you felt about that question at 21 and how you feel about that question now?
Yeah. So at 21, it's... you believe everything that's said to you. Whereas I'll go into it a bit more a bigger picture.
Yeah.
At 21, I believed everything I was told. And it was, your chance is coming. Cool. No problem. I need you to do this for me. Yep, no worries. do that. Yep, cool. My chance is coming. I know it is. I was at Morecambe towards the end of the season. Barry Roach got injured in the game and Sammy McElroy was the manager at the time. And I'm thinking, you never want anyone to get injured. Mm. But I'm thinking, yeah, like Baz is, he's scrambling here. Mm. Like, and I'm thinking, I'm in. I've got Jim Bentley going, get warm. So I'm warming up, thinking, yes, this is it. Like, I'm going to do it. And I've heard Sam McElroy go, where's the doctor? And I'm thinking, what? Like, where's the doctor? He's like, he needs an injection at half time. And I'm thinking, nah, this can't be happening. Like, I'm so close here, like, so close. And they gave him an injection at half time. They made somebody else take the goal kicks and he didn't put me on. And I was devastated after that. And then the worst thing was I sat in the change room afterwards and had to go out and run after the game as well. And trying to get through that 21 point there. And I was like, what is this?
Yeah.
Turn up to train on the Monday. They brought Joe Anion in, another goalkeeper. And I'm still in the same situation. Mm-hmm. And luckily that was, and I was sat there, I'm thinking, I'm over 160 miles away from home. I've just stayed here for Christmas, not been with my family.
Mm.
What's the point?
Mm.
And at that point there, I played a reserve game, got sent off because my head was just scrambled.
Sure. Yeah,
got released at the end of it all, as you do on this merry-go-round.
Yeah, yeah.
And then the fun stuff started. I come back and signed for Kettering in the National League. Brilliant, buzzing, got lads, Nathan Kubu, all sitting there going, this guy's the next Schmeichel, blah, 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 blah. Some 23 at this point. So played very little games in men's football. And I'm now in the National League thinking, brilliant. I've signed at Kettering. We've moved over to Nen Park. It was the first year we moved to Nen Park because obviously Rushden sadly had gone bust. I'm thinking, this is it. Like, I'm flying. Anyway, season starts. I'm off to an absolute flyer. Newport County man of the match at home. And I'm thinking, yeah, this is great. Like my first, and I'm playing in front of 2,000-3,000 people every week. And I'm like, this is it. This is what I've been waiting for. And then from there, first month, everything's rosy. Get an England C call up to play against India.
Brilliant.
And I'm thinking, this is just surreal. What's going on? Like I'm here. Like I'm doing it. Anyway, the England game got cancelled due to, I can't remember why it was, but the game got postponed anyway, but it was still that, you got that call up and it was, that letter was sat on my side at home from the FA saying, you know, you've been called up for the England C squad. I was absolutely delighted. Anyway, second month comes, payday comes, we don't get paid. I'm thinking, what's going on here? Ringing the club, and they're like, oh yeah, there's a slight delay, you get paid in 2 days' time. 2 days' time comes, we got paid. Cool, no problem, obviously just an error.
Mm.
The next month comes, nothing again. Oh yeah, you'll be paid in 2 weeks. It's just a financial issue at the club. I'm thinking, what's going on here? And bearing in mind, I've just signed my lease on my first rental property. Yeah. And I'm just moving because I had nowhere to live.
Yeah.
I'd just come back from Morecambe. You know, my mum had my little sister and my brother at home. And, you know, even she said then, she was like, look, she's like, you're always going to have a roof over your head. She's like, you may have to stay on the sofa, but you will have a place. You know, I was on a mattress on a floor at my dad's because he was in a one bedroom place at the moment at the time. So I was bouncing around everywhere whilst trying to carve out this career.
Yeah.
So anyway, that happened and it just got worse and worse and worse. And literally we didn't get paid for, I think it was 9 months off the back of that. So we're now expected to go out. I'm this 22-year-old thinking, I've got this rental property. I don't know how I'm affording it. And if it wasn't for my dad, I'd have been in the right sort of situation because he covered the rent, you know, and everything else that went with it. Paid for my car, my phone. I was having to travel in with Sol Davis. You know, Sol was lucky enough to have a very good career. Obviously, able in a better position to be able to go to me, look, I'll just travel us in because I couldn't even afford petrol. And all this, the only way I got through it was stepping over that line for an hour and a half on a match day because I could switch off, not having to think about where I'm going to find money from. I even went down to the job centre at one point because I just didn't know what to do.
Mm.
And they were like, we're not giving you any benefits because you have a contract.
Mm.
So I got hung out to dry by them as well. And it just, you know, I'm
only
sat
in
there.
Football this, isn't it?
Oh, it's crazy. Yeah. And it just, the whole place, I just couldn't believe what was going on. I'm this 22-year-old thinking this shouldn't be like this.
Yeah.
Like it's, this is not what this life has been pictured as to me. Like it's, you know, the nice cars, the nice boots and fancy restaurants. Yeah. And I'm here scrambling around for 20 quid. I've got fans after games offering me £50 to get petrol. And it's like, it shouldn't be like this. Anyway, I've somehow managed to just keep going and had a really, really strong season. Gets to the end of the absolute storm of a season. And I'm thinking, right, now what? Because there's still no new owner. No one knows what's going on. The club's in administration. We finished the season with 10 players, playing games with 10 players plus, you know, 15, 16-year-olds on the bench. And we're playing the likes of Luton Town at home at the time. And they're bringing 3,000 odd people.
I remember, so I was a Kettering Town fan. I've talked to you about it. Yeah. And my stepdad was the club doctor at the time of this. And he always volunteered anyway. So the finances were never him. But I know the chairman who you're talking about right now, who I think is in prison.
Yes, he is.
As a result, yeah.
Good. Very good.
Yeah. And I was watching, so I was a Kettering Town fan when they were at Rockingham Road. And then I was a Kettering Town fan when they moved over to Den Park. And I remember this time. And I remember hearing a little bit, I was young. What year would this have been?
I couldn't even tell.
No, I was a teenager, but I remember being a Kettering Town fan. But I used to go a lot. I used to go a lot to watch Kettering. And I knew that the players weren't getting paid because everyone knew, because it was common knowledge. But I remember thinking at the time as a teenager, just thinking, well, they still get to be a professional football player, don't they? Yeah, I didn't.
That's the go-to. That's the go-to.
That was like what I thought as a kid. Yeah. And it's, I would obviously wouldn't have thought that for much longer, but it's, I've never kind of reevaluated that situation again. And it's so interesting for me now to hear it from you as a player. Because I remember just thinking, oh, well, I get to play for Kettering, so that's brilliant, isn't it? Because Kettering is my team.
Yeah, it is.
You say that, and it was the football that was the only thing that was keeping me going, because I would have gone crazy otherwise. And being able to still be around that camaraderie, because you either laugh or cry.
Yeah.
There was a lot of tears around that point because I had no clue what was going on.
Yeah.
I'm still trying to forge a career.
Mm.
And it's a scary place to be when you've got no income, but you're being told that you've still got to turn up to this place every day or you're going to get sacked. And it's like, well, how's that fair? Because, you know, the PFA were very limited to what they could do, because they don't, they help the National League, but it's not as covered by them. So they stepped in to try and do what they could by putting sanctions on the club, et cetera, which probably made it worse, but they were trying to help. But that 90 minutes was just the only bit of freedom you'd get because you could go out. You still had, you know, like I say, you had Luton there. Even though I lost 5-0 over two games over Christmas against them, I still played unbelievably well, both home and away.
And Kettering getting peppered at this point.
Battered. Well. We were conceding two or three a week.
Yeah,
I was getting to shine because I was having 20-odd shots a game.
Yeah.
And being spoken about, which was, I saw as a positive. So I had to try and change my mindset of, right, in this crap situation, how can I help myself? Mm. And the way I felt I could help myself was putting in performances to try and get a move.
Yeah.
So I had to go down that route of, right, I'll deal with that when I'm off the pitch. But whilst I'm on the pitch, I need to just be 100%. I need to really show what I'm about as a young keeper. And it was tough because I was obviously someone who was just trying to make a name for themselves at the point.
Yeah.
Hadn't played any games in men's football.
Still learning.
And exactly that. Yeah. I had no goalkeeper coach to guide me.
Yeah.
And I had Lee Harper popping around every now and again.
Yeah.
And it was just difficult. It was a real, real tough situation. Guy, Kevin Shoemaker as well. He would pop in and out to help. I had to ring him. And, you know, I had Paul Hill at MK Dons, who, when it really went wrong, and the PFA worked out a loophole that if I didn't have the funds to put petrol in my car, I didn't have to go training.
Right, okay.
So what, I started using that. But Hill, he went, look, you need to stay fit. So it allowed me to go in and train with MK Dons. So I basically was full-time training with them and playing on a match day for Kettering.
Yeah.
And it was just a crazy, the things I've seen around that place then were just mental.
Yeah.
So if I remember rightly, you got paid pence on a pound, didn't you, in the end?
So I can't even remember how much I was owed, but I got about £1,300 out of a whole year's worth of salary.
That is shocking.
And they'd done all that underhand as well, because as people that were owed money, we were due to, as players, be at this AGM meeting or whatever they call it, where they vote on how much you get, but no one told any of the players about it. And they just passed this 1p and every pound through.
That is shocking.
And we got cut, we got our hands cut off, and everyone just sort of accepted it. But I did go a bit mad, I won't lie. I started searching for the chairman's house because I knew that he lived in Walnut Tree at the time, and I was driving around looking for his car because he was causing me so much. Yeah. And I was a very angry person, and I was searching for him. And I was thinking, I'm going to start taking stuff from you.
No, don't you owe me.
Yeah, 100%.
You know, and it was a real sort of, it was only my dad that was like, look, you're going to put yourself in a real hole. Stop.
Yeah, yeah.
But it gets worse. You wouldn't think it can, but it gets worse.
I was about to say, how do you not do you hate football at this point, or where are you at with it?
Really oddly, no, I didn't. Because then I got a call off Kevin Shoemake, who went, John Keighley.
Yeah,
he was down at Portsmouth at the time. He went, he's looking for a goalkeeper. I've highly recommended you. They want to have a look at you. And I was like, this is my opportunity. So agreed it all with the guy who was trying to take over at Kettering. And he was like, yeah, cool, no problem, whatever. And then I don't know what happened, but I somehow found the money. I think my dad paid for it for a week in Portsmouth in a hotel. Mm. So 2 days in, get a phone call off this new guy who's now trying to take, where are you? You're meant to be reporting for training. I was like, no, I've agreed that I'm going here. You haven't paid me. The PFA have told me I'm within my rights to do this. And he went, oh, if you look at your bank account, you've been paid. And I was like, what? So they'd paid me a month's wage, which meant I had to cut my trial at Portsmouth short to go back, because they'd paid me that. And they were like, oh yeah, we will pay you next month. And guess what? Did not pay me the next month.
That is so bad.
Just because they wanted to get me away from this trial at Portsmouth. Mm. They'd got wind of it. And because I was going to go to Malaga with Portsmouth the week after for a trial.
That's so disgraceful.
And they, to get through this loophole, they paid me a month's wage that I had to go back.
Yeah.
And the FA were like, they've paid you, you have to go. And it just...
where does that send you? Like you... Oh.
It was just... It was tough because I've gone from this opportunity to then
You're just a commodity at this point. Yeah. You're not a human being.
But then I had people coming in to try and make offers for me, and the chairman was asking for stupid money. He was asking for nearly £500,000 off of two football league clubs, and they were going, he's 22 years old. He's played 30 games in men's football. We're not paying £500,000 for this kid.
Yeah.
And that obviously straight away, as you know, just kills everything. Yeah.
It's so out of your hands as well, though. 100%. It's like you've done what you've gone there, you've done what you needed to do, you've carried on even though you're not getting paid. The opportunities are coming, and then they're taking those opportunities away from you.
Absolutely.
After everything you've done to help them.
Absolutely.
So how does that, like your mind, how do you then obviously push forward from that?
That was the closest I come to
going, I'd be throwing them all in my own net at this point.
Well, this is the thing. I was close to sort of going, what's the point? I just didn't know where to turn with it anymore. And I've got people going, just keep going, it'll be all right. And I'm like, but how longer can I keep
doing this? Yeah.
But yeah, you just find it in yourself somehow. And I suppose it comes from the fact you bounce around so much as a number two and a number three, listening to all this stuff, you think, yeah, we'll be all right. And you believe it. And that's that mindset of a goalie where you go, yeah, that chance will come. They're telling me it's coming. I must be doing something right.
The younger me, and perhaps this is you at the time, I think would have perhaps been a bit more like you and thought, wow, I'm playing professional football. Like I owe this to the fans. And where I'm at now, if that happened to me now, I would start reversing my goal kicks and just smacking my own net. No, I can't think of a way to make every, this point more clear.
Every part of you wants to. Every part of you wants to, but
I've matured, and that's still my decision I'm making.
You know what it is? It's
is it the hope of that opportunity? Like this, you don't want, like, just, I know what you're saying, smashing in your goal, but like you're still believing in this, it's coming, and you don't want to do anything.
You hold on to it, and you just think, right, my only way out of this is by showing that I'm good enough.
Fair play to you.
You know, there's every part of you that's like, I just want to do you over so bad. But it doesn't benefit you in any which way. And it's one thing I always say to young goalies, whenever you're doing a warm up, you don't know who's watching. Do it properly.
Mm-hmm.
And I pulled a lad at Barnet last season because he was sulking. I can't remember what was it about. I can't even remember what it was around, but I think it was a time I'd just been taken out of the squad with Barnet off of the back of player of the month, may I add. Just got to put that in there. But he, because they'd brought somebody in on loan, he got the sulk on because he thought he was going to play, which is fair enough. And I just said to him, I pulled him after warm up and I was like, if I ever see that from you again, I said, I will have you up against the wall because you don't know who's watching you in the crowd and you can get yourself a move off of just a warm up because if people see your attitude doing it right and you pulling off saves left, right and centre, what's a goalie's job?
Yeah.
It's to make saves. And if people see that, they may go, oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Mm. I watched a close friend of mine, Lee Nichols, get a move to Huddersfield. He'd been taken out of the squad at MK Dons by Russell Martin. And, excuse me, and Lee was in the, it was in the COVID times and Lee was constantly, and I watched him and I thought, how are you doing this? But he's in the crowd shouting on, organising the defenders still, like doing all of this. And he told me the story that the Huddersfield goalkeeper coach said to me, I was at a game and all I could hear was you from the ground, or like organising out the off the bench and behind the bench and so forth. And
wow,
not even playing.
Yeah.
And Lee's a hell of a goalkeeper, one of the best that I've played with. And it's amazing how he managed, he hadn't played for over half a season and a giant club like Huddersfield have gone, we'll take you.
Yeah.
I admire your strength in that situation beyond belief. And I'm trying to think of a way that, like, I'm retracting my previous comment about scoring own goals. Like, I'm trying to think about how, a way that I would feel strong in this. But there's only so far you can push a human being. This is what sure. I mean. And I really admire how you dealt with that. I think you dealt with that incredibly well. And I think what you're saying about your friend here is incredible too. These incredible lessons that I wouldn't think of as necessary as a player, which is different from a goalkeeper. It's very, very, very different.
I think you do pick up a lot of stuff as a goalkeeper because you hear a lot and you do constantly get told that it's coming. Whereas a player, you know, you might go on, might not be your position, but you've got a good opportunity of getting on the pitch.
Yeah.
And it just, I'll be honest with you, I don't know if it's built in, ingrained, or from childhood of just having to kind of stand on your own 2 feet a bit, whether you just find that mentality inside you to just keep doing it. And if you want it bad enough, you'll find a way to make it happen.
Mm.
Whether, like I said, hook or by crook, you'll find a way to continue to push and you find a way, even through that low stage of going, what is the point? You find a way of trying to just do something to help yourself. And as much as you hate yourself for being a good person on a pitch, when you want to just be like, nah, I'm done with this.
Yeah.
You just try and something takes over. And I don't know if I'll ever be able to explain it. You might be able to go into it more depth. I don't know, but it just,
I see you
find something. I don't know. It's weird. And
you don't want to be done. You don't want to be outdone. Like you want to keep going, but it's obviously you're still suppressing and pushing down emotions You're on one hand, you've got these, like, there's probably rage and there's probably like just fury with everything that's going on, but you have to then grab all of that, shove it deep down inside here
for sure,
to then go and then perform, because obviously you still want to achieve your dreams. So it's so difficult because you're wrestling with so many emotions and then you've got to go and perform.
Yeah.
And 100%. As you said, like, it's just credit to you because the resolve you show to shove or to put all that away, to then go and then have that mindset of like, I'm not going to be beaten, which is, could maybe link back to the teacher thing where they've said, sure, like, you're not good enough, you're not going to amount to anything. It's almost, you kind
proving
of,
proving a point.
Yeah, and it's a blessing. It's also a curse at the same time. You're proving them wrong and you're proving yourself right.
100%.
But it comes at a cost probably further down the line.
Absolutely. No, absolutely. I think it definitely does. It really, really does it. Because there's all that rejection side of things you've had to deal with, and things happen that are out of your control.
Mm.
No matter what you do, certain things are dictated to you that are out of your control, because you don't pick the team ultimately. You can do whatever you feel and work as hard as you want. I'm in the gym every morning at 6 o'clock.
Yeah.
I go training. I'll do extras afterwards. I then go coaching in the evening. and you just constantly work, but you work on yourself, but you're still dictated to by somebody else and they have effectively your career in their hand.
Do you remember the original question? Because I want to ask 35-year-old Lauren.
So now, yeah. I was going to go on to it for you.
Do you remember the original question?
Yeah. So you said, how would I, how do you keep going then and now? Yeah. Whereas now, it will be okay, is how I see it. And there's no point in worrying about something you can't control. And what I mean by that is if a manager is going to make a decision, that doesn't necessarily mean I'm a bad player. That doesn't mean I just might not be his kind of player.
Yeah.
He will make a decision on me whether he likes it or not.
Mm.
And that mentality now of, because I've seen me fight through those situations and come out the other side, let's not get it twisted, it won't work for everybody.
Mm.
Football's a brutal game.
Mm.
But what I can say is if you can leave there, that you have literally turned over every stone and done everything you possibly can, it's just not meant to be at that place for you, but it will be somewhere else. And I remember saying this to Jordan, the keeper at Barnet last year. I said, it might not be here, but it will be there somewhere else. And he's just gone and won the league in step four, I believe, or step five, or whatever it is, where I can't remember the team he's at, but he's now just gone and won the league because he's played all season.
Yeah.
And it's worked from somewhere. And now he's got promotion. He's one step closer to being back to where he is. And there's no shame in taking a step backwards to go forward. Mm. It's needed at times. And
such an important point.
Mm.
You have to. Prior to this,
we were delivering a talk to the young pros or the young scholars at MK Dons, and we use those exact words. A step backwards is going to be so important at some point.
The idea of playing non-league and part-time football when I was older, when I was younger, I was like, nah, no way, not a chance. But it's where I've made a name for myself. So when I left Kettering, I'd done probably six years in non-league. Hemel Hempstead, Oxford City, Brackley, bouncing around, won two league titles back to back, you know, made a name for myself, playoff finals, etc. And it was probably the best thing that happened to my career because I then got dropped into the real life world of, you need to go and work because you're on £175 a week at a part-time football club. That ain't paying your wages.
Yeah.
That ain't paying your bills. So I had to find out then, what do I do? Took a job in a school doing PE lessons, going to work all day, going to training in the evening, traveling to Truro on a Saturday morning at 5:30 in the morning, getting home at 12 o'clock at night. Lads, you know, we've got Weymouth away on a Tuesday night, getting home at 2:30 in the morning, then getting up to go to teach a load of primary school kids.
Yeah.
And, you know, kids can be hard work when they're screaming and shouting, you've got to bang their head because you're shattered. And it really taught me a lesson. And I was chasing to get back into full-time football so badly, my performances started to go downhill.
Yeah.
Because I was always like, I need to get full-time, I need to get full-time, I need to get full-time. And I didn't actually go back full-time until the age of 29. Wow. And everyone was saying to you, it's too late. Like, just focus on this, focus on that. And I had a really interesting conversation. I'll go back to that, sorry. But I had a really interesting conversation with my old academy manager, Mike Dove. And he saw me in Cafe Nero about 5 months ago. And he come up to me and went, I owe you an apology. I went, what for? And I completely forgot about it. But when I first went part-time, I was coaching at the Dons Academy, also doing the goalies. And he pulled me at the end of the season. He went, you need to stop chasing this now and think about work. He's like, we can offer you a position here at Dons. And he goes, you turned around to me and said, no, I'll get back into full-time football. And he goes, I owe you an apology. He goes, because you've gone and done it.
Yeah.
And I completely forgot that we had that conversation until he reminded me of it. And he actually was good enough to come and apologize and said, not that he needed to, because at the end he was looking out for somebody or how he felt. And that hit. And I was like, Christ, yeah, like I really did just keep going. And sometimes it just becomes a subconscious. You just keep doing it and just keep pushing. And then obviously the age of 29, I re-signed for MK Dons. Made my debut for him at 30.
How amazing.
And it just went full circle. So the club I started at, I come back to, and that's what re-kickstarted my career. And then went to Stevenage and then Barnet and just been rolling ever since.
So important for any young goalkeeper, any young player or any young man listening to this about that journey?
Do you know what it was when we were talking earlier? It was about resilience.
Resilience.
Resilience. The word
should have called
the
podcast resilience.
I always say to my, that's one thing I always say to my young goalies that I coach. So we have two academy sessions that run on a Monday and a Friday night. And I always say to these lads who are like, more the elite lads, sort of the ones who are sort of 15, 14 and up, who are maybe attached to academy systems, because I have a lot of the Dons boys come to me. And they're like, what's the biggest thing for you? And for me as a goalkeeper, you get your mind right, you've got half a chance. Because the pressure you deal with every Saturday, you might disagree with me, but I think it's the hardest position to play, on the basis that we technically can be in control of that result of that game. If I come out and misjudge a cross and it ends up in the back of the net, we could lose that game.
I wholeheartedly agree.
I think I agree with you now, and I'm put it all forward, are going to be battering me. But I just thinking it there, it's like when I play, like, because the game's free flowing, I'm off, my brain's gone, and I'm just like, my brain is, I'm just taking over, my body's going and doing what it needs to do, just because it naturally knows. For you guys, it's like you have to stay switched on for the whole game, so you're having to watch everything. So I think it probably is hard and mentally taxing, because as I said, I'm doing it, my body naturally knows what it's going to do, put the ball in the back of the net. For you, it's like watching where is he going, and then obviously then it's coming towards you, then you're heightened, and then you might go back down again, and the ball goes away, and then you're heightened again, and the ball goes, and then so it must be like the your kind of emotions must just be up and down, and like you say, you're just always on edge constantly. So I probably do agree, even though I'll probably get loads
of stick. On top of that, listen, I know scoring goals pays the big money, right? And I know that people call that the hardest part of football, but like, albeit not to the same level, I was a forward as well. And
very good, can I add?
Good non-league.
Yeah, very good. Yeah. You're very good. The non-league legend. Let's not dumb it down.
This is the other way how my mind works as well. And growing up, and how do you tell a young kid this? I liked the idea of, as a kid, of scoring goals and getting attention. I did. I liked the idea of being the main man. I liked the idea of people going, he won us a game because he scored the goal. I liked that. I did. I probably still do now. Like,
for sure.
I could never understand. I swear, even when I was a kid, and I mean this, if I got put in goal at training or at the park, I just let the ball go in. So they took me out as quickly as possible. I just refused to dive because I was like, if I just fuck this up, they'll let me just get out quicker. And I've never understood, and I adore you, but I still don't understand to this day why a goalkeeper would ever be a goalkeeper. I just don't get it, because there is none of that glory that you can get from being a forward. Unless you have a day where you make 10 worldies and save a penalty in the last minute, you don't get the same accolades. However, you make one mistake, you get absolutely ruined for it. And I'm just like, I'm weighing those options up and I'm thinking, that ain't for me.
Do you know, I realised like the other day, it's like how hard the shots are as well. And I went in goal, like mucking about at Woking, and it's like, oh my God, like the balls would like, and I think I got a hand to one and my arm almost come off. I was watching Twitter, and there's the football club, and they were battering a goalie because I might have been on a championship or something, when they drilled a penalty straight down the middle and the goalie stood there and he couldn't save it. And you're looking at it, and by the time he's hit it, the ball's already in the net, the keeper hasn't actually got his arm up. So I was like, that's not a job I'd ever want to do.
I think it's...
Give us a why. Yeah. Tell us why, because we have no idea.
Because I'm useless on pitch, that's why. That's what it boils down to. Like my other half, Apps, constantly mocks me because she's like, I'd love to see you. She's like, you've got two left feet. She's like, it'd be hilarious watching you. She's like, you look like Bambi on ice. She's not wrong. I mean, I could probably be a centre half, because all I'd have to do is edit and kick it. No, do you know what? I don't know. I used to suffer horrendously with performance anxiety in games, like constantly falling into a hole of, oh my God, like if I come for this cross, like I'm going to drop it, or I'm going to cost us. And that's the biggest battle. And this is why I say to my keepers, you know, really channel your mind to be able to deal with the fact that you're going to make mistakes. I'm 35. I'll still throw them in. It is what it is. I have to deal with that and understand that I don't do that on purpose. The problem you get is fans then jump on your back going, he's useless, he's done this. You know, I don't go to Tesco, and if a woman scans the wrong thing, I don't sit there going, you're useless at your job. You've scanned the wrong thing. Yeah. Like, what are you doing? You're crap.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, it, weigh it up that way, it doesn't seem fair.
Yeah.
It is what it is. Football fans seem to think they're entitled to abuse you because they pay their money. Mm. Cool, they're entitled to their opinion, but it is what it is. It's part of the game. Yeah. But do you know what? I've grown to love it because I can really turn it into something fun. I've had some serious battles with the Woking fans, honestly. Yeah. Like, they, because I used to play for Aldershot as well.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
They adore me.
Yeah.
You could say. But no, do you know what? Why? It's a good question, because it is very, you can have an unbelievable game, all game, save a penalty. It's always, no disrespect, but it's always a striker who gets a headline because the goalie's made 8 saves in that game, 90th minute, striker pops up, heads a weldy into the bottom corner. Great header, glancing. He's done so well to get it on that angle. Mm. That's all everyone talks about. Yeah. So it is a very forgotten position. Mm. But we don't do it for the praise. Honestly, I don't know. I can't give you an answer.
Do you love throwing yourself around?
I do. I think I'm a big child. My missus, again, she refers to it as PE. She says you're going to play PE every day. And she's like, do you know what I do? I love
that.
Yeah. The idea, and it is really in a bit of a sadistic way, the idea of throwing myself in front of somebody who's going to smash a shot at me. Mm. There's nothing better than when you make a big block save. Mm. It hurts, but the feeling afterwards, the rush you get is mental.
Yeah,
like, I made a save on Saturday, obviously, sadly, it relegated Dagenham, but guy's 3 yards out and I've just thrown myself in front of it. It's hit me. He's then stood on my ankle and I'm in bits afterwards. But the rush you get after making that save, you have to kind of self-love in goal.
Yeah.
Because you get up and you've got that little swag and you think, yeah, I've just made an unbelievable save there. Some people might not see it.
Yeah.
But you have to self-love.
You get a pat on the back and then it's forgotten if you don't save one.
Exactly that.
And I think it's really hard being a goalie because I think, like, you get tarred. So you make a few mistakes and then just so you come out of the team and then you move again, you get tarred with that mistake kind of brush. So I think there's, whereas as a forward, you can miss 10 chances in a game, it's forgotten by the next game. And then if you go to the next club, no one remembers you missing. But I think as a goalie, you always get that.
I'll touch on it now. Like, this season has been a up and down season. Mm. And I'll go there with it because people need to understand it. And also as well, on a selfish point, if I can help other goalkeepers with this, then something's achieved from it. You know, I started the season well, then had a dip in form. You know, stats don't lie. Wasn't making as many saves, a couple of mistakes here and there. But then I, even as an experienced player, found myself questioning whether I was good enough and putting so much pressure on myself. And I wasn't playing who I knew I was. Mm. I was overthinking everything. I was timid. I wasn't the gobshite that I normally am on the pitch. I always had to play, I have to play with a little bit of arrogance, like most players do. And I lost that completely. I looked a shell of myself and I felt it. And I just went into myself and I was thinking, right, how do I make this right? Right, I need to do this. I need to eat that. I need to do extra training. And I got into this big swirl of like trying to overdo stuff.
Mm. Yeah.
Anyway, be all and end of it is me and the club agreed that I'd go on loan. And it was the best thing that happened because I went away. And sometimes you need to come away to refresh and restart. I went to Oxford City and everyone was going, oh, what are you doing? They're in a relegation battle. They're 2 points inside the relegation zone. And I went there and I'll openly be honest with you. I said to the guy, the chairman when he spoke to me at Oxford City, and he went, I need you to help me. And I went, I'll get you safe, don't worry. And that's when I was like, that's who I am.
Yeah.
And I went there, 5 out of 10 clean sheets, 2 team of the weeks, clean sheets against the top 3 in the league. And I was back. And everyone was, Laurie this, Laurie that. And honestly, I walked back into Solihull when I got recalled and I felt like the bollocks.
Yeah.
And I went back in with just this arrogance and the back end of the season, like not trying.
It's not arrogance. Confidence.
Confidence, but coupled with that little bit of arrogance that I think you need that's very healthy.
Yeah.
And I walked in with this, I'm here, now let's get us out of this crap.
Yeah,
because we had fallen into a relegation battle at Solihull as well. obviously because we were chasing with you guys working, we'd all fallen into, we'd all got, football changes quick, you all get pulled into this without even knowing. And I thought, you know what, I'm going to come back and save this place as well. And just played, it wasn't just me, you know, other players were back from fitness, from injury, sorry, and as a collective, 100%. And it was just that, we played Southend away my first game back, we spoke about it. And I just felt back to me. You know, got man of the match, team of the week, first clean sheet in 15 for the club. And I was back and finished the season, you know. And what I'm going with this is you will overthink and lose yourself at times when your confidence goes. But go back to basics. It's hard at the time. Take yourself out of the situation sometimes. Don't see yourself as, what was I? Trust your ability to know who you are. And when I went to Oxford, that first message that I sent back to the chairman, I was like, that's me. That's who I am. And you sometimes need to step back and reevaluate and then go again. Because everyone thought I was dead at Solihull. Everyone thought I was done. I'll be straight up.
Everyone thought I was done. Yeah. It's really powerful.
There was a moment where I thought I was done as well. I'll be honest with you. But then from that point there, I was like, no, this ain't done. I'm not finished here. And I will. And I went with the mentality of, I will get back into this side. I sent the sporting director a message when I went on loan to Oxford saying, I'm going to go and do this and I'm going to come back and be your number one.
I think it takes bollocks, like, to take that step back and reevaluate. I think it's not kind of highlighted enough about, I think it's always push. And if it's not going right, keep pushing. But maybe you say, like, you've took that step back to find yourself, gone and, again, it takes bollocks to go into a team that's a level below and it's in a relegation scrap. So there was obviously, there was real belief still in you. But to take that step back and go, no, I need to do this. And obviously then that's propelled you forward. So I think it's just highlighting, showing people that, again, it's not always about the push. It's always sometimes the step back, the reevaluate, which then kind of, it's almost like a slingshot. It pulls you back, gets you what you need, and then it propels you forward again.
I don't know whether I'll get grief for this, but I don't really care. But I think ego gets in the way sometimes. I think people look at maybe... a lot of people still don't understand how strong the whole National League setup is now. North, South, majority of teams in North and South are all full-time or hybrid, minimum. You go even one step below that and there's teams that are full-time and hybrid as well. Non-league is not what it used to be, but where I believe people won't swallow their ego because they think, and it's hard, I used to be that person. I'm this footballer, I need to be full-time. I can't be seen at a part-time team. And that's where I feel the problem lies sometimes. People won't take that right step that they need to put their career back forward again because they can't swallow their ego. And they're really worried about what we said. We're known as this footballer. Oh my God, if I go there, am I going to be known as that anymore? I don't care.
I think what you've just said is not up for debate. I think it's just absolutely the truth. You're like, that's not, I can wholeheartedly agree with you. I wholeheartedly agree with you. And I love listening to not just my friend. I love listening to a young man own how you just owned that. Like, it's not arrogance. Arrogance has some negative connotations to it. I didn't feel any negativity towards you saying, I'm back, I'm me. Because you were just you in your entirety. And I love being around that. I love being around that. I've got two questions.
Yeah.
Just wondering where to go.
Yeah. I've really sat back into them. One's really thought provoking and you can delve into it as much as you can, as much as you want to. And one is just funny.
Nice.
Which way around do you want it?
Surprise me.
Oh, we'll do funny first.
Yeah.
It's light in the mood, and then let's go deep again. And you'll agree with me on this. Right. Goalies will make a save.
Yeah.
And then come steaming out shouting.
I think this is coming.
Right. They're just fucking making a point that they made a big save. Like, because they're not allowed to celebrate. They're not allowed to just give it large to the crowd that they made it. Well, they are allowed, but they don't.
I do.
Right. What is it? What is it about when you make a big save? Because you can't be that annoyed you get a shot off. Like, they like.
Do you know what it is? You lot have one job, keep the ball. Yeah. Simple. If it's got to me, you're not doing your job, so I'm going to tell you about
why
it.
Why not say it before that happens then?
Do you know
why
I mean?
Wait till you've made a world
do and you still don't listen? This is what I'm saying. We're screaming at you 90 minutes of a game and you don't listen. No, it's, I don't know whether it's just a habit. I don't know. It might be a little bit of a...
I think I did, but I was a goal.
I think it is genuinely a little bit of a thing of, I've just made a worldly save, so I'm going to make sure everyone
fucking knows about it.
Like, if I score, I'm running.
You're off.
I'm running around the stadium.
Honestly,
so.
When you lot score, you all run off up the pitch, and I'm just like, hey.
But do you know, I think that's really hard.
Roly poly,
mad.
Because you do, because like, and it's not like you make a save. You can make three or four saves. But then it's forgotten and the play's gone up the other end because we're watching the ball. So obviously the highest level, the cameras can come back, but you could have made four worldies and they go up the other end, score. And it's like, don't worry about the saves he's made. We just scored a goal.
The funny thing is though, because you can make a worldie save and you can go and drop the cross and they put it in the back of the net.
Mm.
And you then have to get up from making that save, come from this high, and you've got to pull yourself straight back into this. I've got to deal with this now.
Oh, yeah. And then they go stick the ball on him. Because he's just dropped one.
Yeah, exactly that. And it's, you got, football for a goal is mad because it's, you do that, you make you can make a double save that's incredible. And then I've got to now organise my defenders back into their positions and deal with this cross that's coming in with nine men that are trying to take my head off.
Mm. And I've got to go. They are mad.
Probably, yeah. Honestly, my other half says, a funny thing is though, I've had a lot of lads who have said to me, you're fairly normal for a goalie.
Yeah, I'm going
to
say.
So I will take it. Yeah. I will take it. I'll be honest with you, Jim. Yeah. I will take it. But no, going back to it, I think you could be bang on, to be honest. I think it could be our way of celebrating. Yeah.
I think
it could be.
I think if I was a goalie, which I'm not, and I made a save, I'd do it 100%.
You can't save it. Celebrate to the crowd, but then they're in another shot.
The thing is, I enjoy it when you lot score. I'll go and give it to the fans behind the goal because they've been giving it to me for 90 minutes, telling me how much a twat I am.
Yeah, and that must be tough because, like I say, we're playing. So, and again, I don't hear anything when I'm playing. I'm switched off, so I'm playing and playing. And anytime I hear something, if it's stopped for a corner or throwing, but for you, you're concentrating on the game. You've probably got 500, 600, 700, 800, whatever, people just screaming at you. So you're dealing with that in one ear, concentrating on that, trying to tell them what to do, watching where the ball's going, emotions going up and down. It's like,
it's mental. You have to really build a wall to it. I used to lose my head with it and I used to nibble so badly.
Yeah.
Now I just go on the wind up because it winds them up even more.
I
just go proper cocky and arrogant because they lose their head with it.
Yeah.
What's your best return line?
Oh, I might get in trouble for this one, but I basically told the guy to look at the state of himself because he had no teeth. I was a Woking fan, actually. Was it? Yeah, it was. And
I always like the other ones about the people just paying to be there. I love just
mental. I've used that as well.
You've done your week's wages to come watch me relax.
We played Alfred in a way, and some geezer was like, "Keeper, you're a wanker. You're gonna have to get your paintbrush out in the next year." And I was like, you're drinking a pint on a Saturday at Alfred and paying to watch me. I was like, just keep paying my wages. Yeah. It's fine. I was like, honestly, I'll appreciate it. I said, because when you go to work on Monday, I'm still going to be sat in bed. And it just, by the way, let me clear that up. I have nothing against people who go out every day and work, but I'm going to give it back to you.
Yeah,
and
I've only gained
that confidence as I got older, because that become with more belief in my ability as well. Yeah.
But in the same way, he doesn't really think what he's shouting at you and you don't think what you're really shouting back at him. We're not okaying either of these situations.
For sure.
You have to, that's almost like a shield that you have to use in that situation, because sure as hell, if you do react to it in a negative way or you get upset or if you go like, oh, fuck off, you're going to get more of it. It's the only way to combat it in football.
It's hard because sometimes they can get very personal. Mm. I had a group of fans 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago, worked out who my missus was and started giving it there. She's a wrong one, what's she doing whilst you're here? Just all the usual. Mm. And you have to then switch off from that because that's when it can go south. Unfortunately, you have a job to do.
Yeah.
My missus does have her mouth on her and has politely told people before at games, and I'm a little bit like, oh God, it's a bit of a nervous time.
I know how you feel.
But she can handle herself, obviously, as you know. Yeah. And you know, she actually decided to tell a Wealdstone fan that I'm sure your wife is very proud of you standing here at your big age shouting at another human being.
And that's a great line.
I was like, oh God. She was like, I bet your wife is really proud of you.
That's a great way of putting it. Way of putting it.
It was funny, but no, you do have to, it is good. Sometimes you'll get fans who are just like ledge and they are giving it to you, you give it back and they're sweet. Some you'll get and they're just angry people.
Okay, my more serious question. And we know a lot about each other and I don't need you to go into a lot of detail with certain things because that's not what this is about, but I think it's a really important question for me to ask. And it's kind of, there's two elements to it. For you and the career you've had, like, but what impact do you think being a football player and maybe even more specifically a goalkeeper has had on your personal life?
Quite big. I would say quite big. It leaves you with a lot of self-doubt that you don't know about because you, not betray, but you always have to be okay. You always have to be okay. Oh, he's a footballer. What's he got to worry about? He's got the life. Yeah, my career, I'd never change it. But you have to be okay in every situation. You have to go on. And that's how it's seen. And I've had a lot of tough times of recent, football aside from football, where I've gone home and just cried. Because, you know, I had it at Barnet when I got taken out of the team. You just question everything. I was going through stages. I must have been a nightmare to live with my missus because I was, I don't think I can do it anymore. I'm too slow. I'm getting too old. Again, that's listening to people going, oh, you're 35, you're getting to the end of your career. I'm in great shape. I've got years left. And you know, I still move like a, and I'll be honest, I'm still moving like a 28-year-old, 27-year-old. But the effect it has, the rejection, the being told you're not good enough. What else? I can't even tell. There's the countless strings of everything. Even things that get shouted to you, you don't take them in, but your body holds everything. It sponges everything up and those vibrations stick somewhere.
Yeah.
And it creates that seed of doubt. And yeah, I've had moments where I've just gone home and broken down. And my missus has been incredible.
Yeah.
Because she's gone through it. Everything, you know, and she's just gone, give your head a wobble. You're unbelievable. You are so good at what you do. She's like, you're so strong. She's like, your mentality to get up every day, even when it's going against you and keep going, says so much about you as a person. But I think football leaves you very much constantly needing validation. You don't know. You lose yourself because you think that's all you are. You think that tag is just you. And if you're not seen as that footballer, I had it when I was younger of, if I'm not a footballer, I'm worthless to everybody. Are they going to look at me the same or are they going to mock me because I'm not a footballer anymore? My career is going to come to an end, is what it is. It'll be tough because doing something we love every day in, and it is a bubble, let's be real. It's a crazy bubble because you turn up to this place, you kick a ball around for an hour and a half, you get fed, you do gym, you go home. Who doesn't want that lifestyle? You've got the rest of the day to do as you want while people are out there grafting 9 to 5 and we get paid very healthily for it to work half the hours to some poor people out there who graft and really just try and get by in life. And I do feel, you know, like sometimes it can get lost. I do. I will say it, and I'll be straight up with it. I feel like footballers can be quite lonely people, because we'll finish work, and we've had the camaraderie of our boys all day, but your mates are at work. You know, your missus is at work, and you're like, "What do I do? Am I quite a lonely person? Do you know what I mean?" But it definitely is an industry for the strong-minded. I think it. You need to learn yourself. You need to understand who you are because I never understood who I was until recently when we've had very deep conversations. I've spoken to my therapist a lot and I'll be open about it. I think a lot of people should go through therapy. I think everyone should speak to somebody even if they feel like they're in the best place possible because I thought I was okay until I really delved into a lot of situations in my life that made me understand a lot more, that a lot of how I reacted was away and from what happened at football. It's not excusing stuff, but it creates, the biggest thing I think it creates is that self-doubt without you even knowing. Being told that you're not good enough, you then sit there and think in a situation and your natural instinct will be, I'm not good enough. You don't know why you've said it, but you've created this thing in your head that you're not good enough, because it's, you've been told it countless times when you've been released from clubs or someone's telling you you're shit on the sideline. You've obviously held on to that somewhere down the line without realizing, and your computer's then kicked in and gone, well, we can't do this, so no. But then since meeting my partner, she has created this environment for me now that I am something else outside of football. And she is massively, massively a part of pulling that out of me. You know, she's trained me up with her legal firm. I now do estate planning. I'm an estate planner for her legal firm. She didn't have to do that for me. She's given me a career after football. She always says to me, this isn't going to be your full time. She's like, I know you're going to give so much more after football. She's like, but she's given me a platform of, right, when football's over, I can make a very good income from working with her. And that's why I feel like I'm in a position where it's going to be hard when I retire. I won't lie. And I think I will have moments where I get very lost because, like we've said, you lose that structure. You sit at home and you think, what do I do today? Like, I should be getting on a coach, but like, I'll have a random Saturday off and Jay loves it. She's like, yes, Saturday review. 3 o'clock comes and I'm like, oh God, like my body's so programmed to be out on a pitch and the endorphin rush. It's then like, what are we doing? Why are we in a Zara shop? Not on a football pitch. We should be there. And it's mad how your body is so tuned.
I can imagine.
To those. I think you can probably resonate with that. Massively. It's like when it, off season, I love off season. Because even more so because my missus drags me away for 6 weeks. She's like, right, I've lost you for 9 months. I'm taking you away for 6 weeks. So we go away for 6 weeks, which I think is good because I don't get that. I miss football when I'm not there, but I don't get that, oh God, like that irritated rush. Exactly that. So I'm taking my mind away from it. But she's like, why are you in the gym at 6 o'clock on holiday? But I know what's coming. So I know I need to run. I was in the gym this morning doing a mental run. And someone come up to me and went, what are you doing? The season's just finished.
I can't sit still.
I can't sit still. Like, I need to continue on. And that's part in my brain going, right, I need to be better next season. And that starts now. And it's really odd. And I love the mentality I have of it. I think my missus wants to kill me sometimes when I'm dragging her out of bed at six in the morning. But I think football does a lot to your body.
It does
to your mind, your body. Obviously, the wear and tear is a given. But psychologically, I think as a footballer, there needs to be more.
100%.
There needs to be more support. I know that this is great. As soon as you said it to me about what you were doing, I was blown away by it because it needs to be heard. And I think there needs to be more support for people, especially leaving football. This is why I think, and a lot of footballers go mad. Because we are in that such a structured environment. You lose yourself, even though you know yourself. It sounds so weird and contradicting. You know yourself, but you lose yourself. Because you've lost something that I've done since 9 years old. And then I've left school and it's all I've done. And it's crazy because I don't know how I will be okay. I know that much because I've worked so much on myself now to know I have an identity out of football. But I still know there's going to be moments where I'm like, who am I?
It's almost like a reconditioning program, isn't it? I'm just thinking as you're talking and you're saying like, and you're going and your body's still itching. I was like that when I finished, like, I think because you train your body so hard, as you said, your body gets used to it. Like my gym programs when I came out of football, I was like sprinting and because I didn't know anything else. And when I was trying to do less, it was really difficult. And obviously then with the mind kind of going at the same time, it's almost like you need to be reconditioned out of football back into the real world. But I think that can probably be staged when you're in it. As you said, like learning to know kind of who you are, what you like outside of football. It's almost like a process. Like you never know when you're going to come out of football, but we all hope we get to 35, 36. So there has to be some kind of conditioning program. And obviously it seems like you've kind of, that's probably been helpful to you to start that. Like knowing that at some stage you will be out, but you're putting those blocks into place. As I said, that made a big difference to you then? And do you think, how do you see that maybe getting into football? How could that?
Not just off the pitch, but on it as well. Because there's so much where I sit there and think, how am I going to pay my bills after football? What am I going to do? What route do I go down? Do I go into goalkeeper coaching? Yeah, that's easy. But then I'm still in that same worrying environment. If a manager gets a sack, I'm losing my job and it's no fault of my own. I've lived my life contract to contract. When I finish football, I don't want that anymore. I don't want to be... I probably will go into coaching at some point. Let's not beat around the bush. But that worry of where's the next contract or... Again, I'm putting my fate in somebody else's hands. If a manager gets sacked, normally they clean out the whole backroom staff. So then I've gone from this nice contract as a goalkeeper coach to 3 months in, manager's not quite done it. I'm now getting a sack as well for no reason. But I think my coaching business has done really well. It's doing well. I have the stuff with Future Legal, which is obviously Jade's business.
Yeah, I started saying it earlier. She's amazing. She's amazing for you.
She's done so much and I will be forever grateful to her because she didn't have to, but has.
She's amazing.
And she is the most amazing person I think I've ever met because she has picked up just like that and she didn't have to. But I think what she's done is she's created an environment for me now to just go and play freely on the pitch. Because I'm not thinking about money. I'm not thinking about what I'm going to do after football. I can just go out and play.
Yeah, that's amazing.
And it just keeps your mind so clear. And this is why I always say what I said to you before we got into here. I believe that they should put something in place for scholars and say and make it mandatory that they need to maybe take up a trade of some sort in their part-time or their free time, do some sort of additional education. I feel like it should be attached to the scholarship system. The college schemes that they put them on are okay, but it allows these kids, we've all been children, we've all been at school, we've all been young lads. When I was at college, I had no interest in my level 2 diploma in sport. Why not say to these boys, you've got this apprenticeship, but you have to also pass this. They have so much free time in the evening. So much free time as a footballer. Like, because I can tell you now, I reckon the success rate of people coming through would be so much higher if they knew they had something to fall back on.
100%.
Because they're not going to be worrying about the next contract. They can sit there and go, even a PT, they can go get a PT degree and they've got something there in place and it will help them play so much more freely.
I completely agree. And I can tell you a former athlete of any kind will always get on better in those industries than anyway. I think that last thing you just said about making it mandatory, but then seeing the success rate improve as a result of it is really important. To giving them that this isn't all or nothing, then allowing them to flourish on the pitch by giving them that was really important.
I think
really important.
They touch on the success rates when you sign as an apprentice, but people don't understand how tough it actually is. You know, people don't get that you're not just going to drop into non-league if you leave because you've been an apprentice somewhere. It doesn't work like that. It does not work like that. But no one's feeding this through and telling them this. And I don't see it as a negative. I don't see it as, we're setting them up to fail. No, we're setting them up so that they have a career after football as well, if that doesn't work. Because the likelihood is, let's be real, it probably isn't going to work out to what level they want it to. They may always play at a certain level where they're getting £100-200 a week, which is still very good and a success. 100%. I believe that's a success because you're getting paid to do something you love. That's how I see it. Might not be at the level you want it to be. I wish I'd have played a lot more football league games than I have, but my career has been amazing. I've done so much. I've achieved so much in non-league. I'm very well known in non-league because of what I have achieved. But I just don't think people dress it up as you're preparing them to fail. Why do we have to see it that way? See it as I'm bettering this person to free their mind to go out and show what they can really do on the pitch.
Wholeheartedly agree.
Yeah.
Wholeheartedly agree.
It doesn't make sense to me.
No.
And I don't understand why there's not more. I know you can't mollycoddle everyone, but I don't understand why. I don't understand why there's not more in play for these yeah. young lads, because then they come out as very lost individuals.
Yeah.
We're seeing it. We're seeing it both ends of the spectrum, bro, in terms of I'm seeing it firsthand with the people in the gym who are not quite making it at a younger age and are being left in this situation very lost at 17, 18, 19, 20.
For sure.
And obviously we've talked about it at a different stage of your career when you're coming out lost. Well,
I had nothing backed up at all. Yeah. So I just literally was going at it. I had major kind of self-sabotage and like confidence issues and stuff. So I never really did anything outside of it because I was like, football's there, just keep working hard. I got to the end of it and I had nothing.
It's crazy, isn't it?
And I was like, and I think towards the end, a lot of it probably was like, I was going to places maybe I shouldn't have done, or like staying and getting money where I shouldn't have done. And I was probably fear of like, once it's finished, I've got nothing.
Mm.
And then then that's probably why I had a big drop off as well, like fell off a cliff. Because again, it's like, I've lost who I was. I don't actually know where I'm going. So then I literally just, it all came at once. And I was like, and I was a seasoned professional. I was lucky. I earned good money and I played high level, but I still came to the end of it and was like, this, what am I going to do? Like, what is my purpose?
For sure.
I think very few people I can almost guarantee, we've talked about it, but the best moments in your career, they just was flow state. It just happened. Very few people would be able to feel that level of pressure. And I'm not talking about the pressure of the match itself. I'm talking about fucking putting a food on the table for your kids and a roof over their head, like that pressure. And then being told you have to perform optimally. Very few people, I'm sure, would be able to do that.
It's mental.
Very, very few.
Because when you really think about it, you're being asked with 6 months left on your contract to put your body on the line, knowing damn well if you go and injure yourself severely, they're not going to renew your contract. We've just had a conversation about a certain individual, and you're being asked to put your body on the line with no guarantee. And if I injure myself, I know you're just going to kick me to the curb. And you're now playing with that in your mind, and you're going, right, I've still got to perform here because I need a new contract. Mm. But then it spirals and you sit there and you think, God, like, where am I? I had it in the summer last year. And if it wasn't for Jade, I'd have probably just jumped at the first contract. But I got a few offers through and she went, just wait.
Yeah.
She's like, something's coming. And I was like, we in the industry, you know that these chances can come and go very quickly.
Yeah, yeah.
And there's always somebody else waiting.
Yeah.
And I was like, you don't understand. I was like,
yeah,
well, you don't get it. And she's like, please trust me. And I was like, right, I need to. And then I thought, I'll be all right.
Mm.
I'll find something. Lo and behold, waiting, along comes Solio, the contract that I wanted. And it was mental, because I would have jumped into something that wasn't quite right for me. But you play all these tricks in your mind of all of that, basically. It's crazy. And you're being asked with 6 months left on your contract to go and perform at the highest level with pressure of getting that deal, you know, potentially injuring yourself and then them going, well, you're injured, so we're not going to renew it.
A lot of people need to hear what you just said.
It's crazy.
A lot of people need to hear what you just said. Not least of all fans. Not least of all mental. Fans. Just conscious of time, which is...
I've got one thing that I want to ask you.
Go on, you go.
So after all this... Whether it's a question or a statement, I don't know, but have you ever stopped and realised how impressive you've been with your mentality and like what you've been kind of told when you were a kid to what you've achieved now? Have you ever stopped and gone, fucking hell, like my mentality is fucking unreal? Because it is, from what you've had to deal with for your whole career,
like
there's not many people that can deal with what you've had to deal with. So... in going forward, whatever you do, it's like that is something that you can take forward in your life, because you've been told at 9 years you're never going to make anything. You've got the lows and you've had the highs.
Mm.
You've come through all of that. Have you ever sat down and just gone, "Fuck me, I'm fucking my mentality is fucking"?
Not until I met my partner,
because
I never thought about it. I thought it was normal.
Mm.
I thought that's what everyone did in football. I thought that was just a given. And she really hit it home. She's like, break down what you've done and what you've been through. And the fact that you were 29 and you've re-signed as a professional full time. She's like, against all the adversity, she's like, you're still doing it. And she's like, look at all the boys that you come through with. Where are they now? And that's no disrespect to them. She's like, but you kept going. And yeah, it is, I do believe I do have a very strong mentality. I have the mentality of if I want something, I'll go and get it. Not sure how. It's my biggest saying. I'm not sure how, but I'll find a way. And that's what I've done with life. Some people say you've blagged your way through life. I'll take that. But I've still done it.
I think it's disrespectful to say that, because I think when you're talking explaining what you've gone through.
For sure, but people that don't see it, how many people come to you and go, oh, you're so lucky to do what you do?
Yeah,
sweet. All right, whatever. We'll leave it at that. I'm not going to argue with you over that, because I could go into this for days with you. You've not seen the tears at home, what my partner's had to deal with, the sacrifice, fits so of anger from me, the missed Christmases, the missed New Year's days, sitting in hotels when you're missing weddings or whatever. And look, I'm very grateful for what I've done, and I'll never ever change my career, as I'm sure you wouldn't either. And it comes with its ups and downs, and it's a roller coaster, but it's why we do it. And the game has you hooked. That's the only thing I can say. It's like a drug, and you need more of it, whether you're going through the crap times, and you will have more lows and you will highs, 100%. I really believe that. But as much as I've sat there and gone, I'm done with this, 2 days later, I'm back on a training pitch, doing it all again. It's mental.
I think that's a nice time for us to come into our last section. And I think what's become extremely evident here for all of us, although this is a podcast based around men, us three would be fucked about the very good women in our life.
100%. Crikey. Yeah, I know. My lord.
Yeah.
Like toddlers, isn't we?
You just need to look it up.
What should I do now?
So I always, I wanted to leave time for this section, because it's an important section. And last time, with lovely Aaron, we almost were down to the last seconds of the pod. So I wanted to make sure we had enough time for this. So the last section we do here, and Craig summarized you. What's really beautiful is he didn't know you before today. I already knew this, and he summarized you beautifully there. And it was really lovely to hear. And he saw that, and it was so true. Anyway, what we do here, the last thing we like to give a piece of advice or a quote or a way to live or something that's just resonated with us as the final thing. So that'll be your final thing, and you'll say it, and we'll just thank you for it, and we'll move on. But as well as that, we give you the last piece of advice the last person gave us. You don't have to comment on that. Like, that's just kind of that we reshare what they told us, and then it's your turn to give the next person that advice and the people listening.
Cool.
So Aaron's last quote was, God won't take you to what he can't take you through. God won't take you to what he can't take you through.
Agree.
I think so much of what you said is evident in that quote as well.
It has to be. I think there's another saying, isn't there, that God gives his toughest challenges to his toughest soldiers.
Yeah, very similar.
Like that. I can't remember what it was, but
Aaron had that tail on the inside of his bicep, and I can tell you he did live that. He lived through that, and he is he's doing so well now. In not just his incredible football career, but what he's doing now in punditry, and he's a very good friend of Craig's, and we were very lucky to spend some time with him, and I love that from him. So now, Laurie Walker, what's your
quote? Use a bit of paper.
I
love this saying, but I had to go and
buy it. Yeah, go do it, do it.
But it is, because you'll have bad times, it always wakes you up to the good stuff you weren't paying attention to.
And you've lived that and breathed that.
100%. You can get very lost in focusing on just the bad. But it's always putting you to somewhere better.
The beauty in football and the beauty in the world, we just got to look for it.
100%.
Thank you, mate.
I appreciate it. Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.